Welcome to the Shabbat Torah study, all. Yada, of course, is again still on his cruise with his lovely wife, reenacting their honeymoon. Tonight it's Kirk, and he's our assistant IT man, and JB and myself will be doing the show. How are you guys this evening?
We're great. How are you doing?
Doing good.
Well, I got out of the week with my shirt on. I'm okay.
Yeah, that's all you can ask for, right?
that's about right. That's about the best we're going to do in this little man-made matrix we have. We were doing Noah, and we pretty much finished and covered the fact that, and pretty much proved out the fact that the flood was regional, and it was started with deep ocean water, just as Yahweh said it was, which is, another example of prophecy, whether it's forward or backwards. Certainly, I would look at the prophecy of the way the flood was started as a bit of both. Because when he said he started it with deep ocean water, certainly the Burkle crater had not been found at that point. That's a recent event. And so that just opened our eyes to how accurate his actual prophecy is when he used a term that has Akkadian roots and meant with ocean water. And I thought that was that is one of the more astounding prophecies that can be proved beyond any reason, right there in Torah. What did you guys think?
Pretty amazing stuff. I mean, he just once again another proof that he's 100% right on.
Yeah, and then we had, of course, the dimensions of the Ark, which are equivalent to our most advanced naval ships today, which are certainly the most advanced ships on the planet, and how 3,500 years ago anyone would have been able to make up those numbers, certainly in a place that was landlocked, is...
Some guy who'd never been on the ocean before in his life knew how to create perfect shape and perfect dimensions.
He wasn't even close to the water, was he? About 600 miles or something.
Yeah, he was definitely landlocked.
Yeah, he's a...
No question about it. And so, I mean, these are astounding things, and these are things that just further our knowledge and deepen our understanding. And beyond that, verify the Torah. Because, one of the things that... Yes, and one of the things that Yahweh tells us is that he's going to put a signature, right, in all his writings, and so they can be verified. And that's what he talks about, the verifiability and the trustworthiness of his instructions, of his Torah. Today, on FB, Nectar Brown, who's an FB friend of mine and also a member of Unpopular, had written a post on my wall called Forgiveness. And I'm going to read this to you. It's pretty short. He says, the Torah speaks about forgiveness within the family and within members of the covenant. It does not tell us to forgive every Tom, Dick, Mary, and Jane that comes down the road. There was no forgiveness for Amalek. The first mention of forgiveness is in the book of Bereshit, where Yosef forgives his brothers. Now, that would be family members, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
There's not one word stating that we are to forgive, every Tom, Dick, or Harry that comes down the road. And that is true. And that's one of the things that kind of sticks in my craw about religious individuals. You know, I've mentioned before, I watch a lot of these ID shows, and at the end of an ID investigative discovery shows, what they'll do when they catch the person who raped and murdered their daughter, they'll put family members on that say, "Now I forgive him. I absolutely forgive him." You know, personally, if somebody did that to one of my children, I'd I'd want to hang them upside down and skin them alive with a knife dipped in shit. But that's just me, you know.
I think you're being
Yeah, maybe I am. Maybe we should put a blowtorch to them, too. I just find it amazing that people think, in the religious world, specifically Christianity, that somehow forgiveness equates to salvation. Now, when Yahweh talks about his pakudim and his chukah, his moed mikra, his mitzvah, did I miss something there, you guys? I mean, is there something in there about forgiving vile people?
Nowhere. You don't forgive them.
Especially for things as vile as murder. I mean, I do recall Cain being booted from the family for murder. Isn't that right?
Apparently consequent, but he still allowed him to live for a pretty good while, but not with the family.
Yeah, he booted him out of the family.
So separation from God is a pretty big deal. It's a pretty big punishment, even if he didn't kill him.
Right. So he was not forgiven either.
No.
You know.
No.
Craig's pointed this out. I want to point it out as well. Yahweh is not focused on salvation.
No.
He's focused on relationship. That's what all this is about.
Correct.
Yeah. His only interest in salvation is that it is necessary for us to have a relationship. That's his only interest.
Yeah, it might be.
So that we can live with him. But that's all he cares. You know, the end product is what he cares about, not the process.
Yeah, he cares about the process too, but certainly not the process of, our own.
It's central.
Yeah, right. It's one of the reasons that it's so delusional that religious people base their salvation on, you know, how many scumbags they happen to forgive. You know, if they ever bothered to listen to Yahweh's words, they'd find out that it is about relationship, and that's what matters, not forgiveness of scumbags. Salvation just happens to be a byproduct of the relationship. If you have a good relationship with somebody, you might want them around a while, which is what I think you were saying, JB.
Exactly. Yeah, he doesn't want a temporary relationship with us. He wants it permanent. And for that, he has to find a way, he had to come up with a way to save us. But that wasn't, it wasn't, okay, I'm going to save them. It was, I want them to be with me. Now I have to find a way to make this happen. With, the relationship being the focus.
In the region.
Yeah,
Go ahead. I was going to say, let me read you a short line, Genesis 12:1, and Yahweh said to Abraham, because everything, when I'm not sure, I try to get all my perspective either from the 10 statements on the tablets or the initial story of Abraham in regards to matters like this. And Yahweh said, Abraham, it's my request and desire that you, of your own volition, that you literally walk away and genuinely come out of your country, away from your relatives, your relationships with them, and away from your father's house to God's realm, which as a result of the relationship, I will show you and provide. So he says that's not the relationship you can have to live, especially in where he's pulling from, where he's asking to remove himself from, which is Babylon. And the whole thing was to have a relationship. He didn't say, hey, I want to save you. He said, I want you to have a relationship with me. It's axiomatic that he would save you if you live with him eternally. He's eternal. To be with him and have a relationship with him, you have to be eternal. So it's kind of a... It's almost a silly question to talk about salvation, and it's a byproduct, like JB said. I mean,
one of the things that Yahweh told Yirmiyah was that, I've known you since you were in the womb.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we know that choice is paramount to a relationship.
Correct. Yeah.
We also know that, due to special relativity, When Yahweh's giving a prophetic declaration, in other words, he's telling us what's going to happen in the future, it's not because he's manipulating that future. It's because he's reporting back, right, to the Nabi, to the prophet, to this to his personal dictator. I guess that'd be the best way to put it. They're taking dictation is what they're doing.
Right, yeah.
You know, with a pen in their hand. And I was going to say scribe, but I would never reduce a Navi to a scribe. That's a man-made liar there. But anyway, these people are writing what Yahweh's already seen in the future. That's one of the reasons that he said, you'll be able to tell it's from me because it's trustworthy, verifiable, and it'll never be wrong. Correct?
Right.
And so people have asked me, why did such good things happen to me? Or why is it that, you know, I felt protected before I ever knew Yahweh? And I have to tell you, I've thought the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Really.
Well, you wonder why. How did you get so lucky?
Well, yeah. There were a couple of times, believe me. I did. But now I realize that, in fact, we were protected. You were. I was, JB, you were. It's because Yahweh had already seen. He didn't force us to make choices. We just happened to make good ones.
Mm-hmm. And he knew the choices we made before we
That's why he knew Yirmiyahu in the womb. Yirmiyahu was not a wind-up toy designed to be a Navi. You know, he decided to know Yahweh. And because of this decision, Yahweh knew him in the future, therefore he knew him from the womb.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be fair to
say? I would add one thing to that, though. This idea that just because, you know, good things happen to you in bad times doesn't mean God was looking out for you. I hear that so often from Christians. Oh, you know, I lost my job, and then, you know, all these people started giving me money. God's looking out for me. No, that's people looking out for you.
That's right.
Yeah, this idea that everything that happens in your life to God just drives me nuts.
Well, no, I'm hearing that.
He does micromanage you on anything, so he can come to your rescue, but he's not going to micromanage all this stuff. So if you fall in the hole and break your leg, or if you fall in the hole and don't break your leg, it's because you fell different.
If you lay your motorcycle down and wreck your arm and leg, I'm not suggesting any of that.
No.
I really, believe me, I'm not. I'm talking about in life situations.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, I came out of it, and I can tell you about three times, and none of them should have happened, but they did. And and that just brought me to that this week because somebody had asked me that question.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you know, if you're covenant now, you were covenant then, you just didn't know it, but Yahweh surely did. You know,
right.
And it's not like Yahweh is going to rescue us from losing money or losing property or losing loved ones or losing, you know, I'm not suggesting any of that. Matter of fact, I believe it was Yashayahu, better known as Isaiah today, that I think they sawed him in half. You know, if I'm not mistaken, you know, it's not as though, you know, we can't be abused or killed or anything like that. I'm not even saying that.
Yeah.
But I am saying that people that are out sharing Yahweh's words are doing the work of Yahweh, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
You know, associates. That's what he asked you to do. Share it with your family. Share it with your people around you. If they're interested. If they're not interested,
that would be a purposeful life, according to him, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I see us all doing that here today, and I'm not suggesting that's some kind of miracle. There's all kinds of people that can say that. You know, they happen to be here, and they've, in their delusional mind, decided that, you know, somehow through a miracle they're here talking about words in opposition to Yahweh, as an example. But I am saying that's how Yahweh would know us, even though we weren't covenant family yet. That'd be fair to say, wouldn't it?
I think so. You know, it, some of it could, yeah. It's hard for me to personally to imagine that he didn't know certain people were coming and certain people would make the decision. Did he assist them a little bit or did they, I can't prove it. But
I think people make choices on their own.
Yeah.
I really do. Now, does he avail them of that choice? Probably.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like Craig has said. You know, Is there certain people he really wants to meet? Yeah, there are. I think so.
Yeah.
Does he play favorites? Yeah, I believe he does. You know,
well,
I just wanted
know.
To point that out. It's you know, special relativity is just a fact. So if he sees the future, and he obviously can see the future, that's why prophecy happens. He's not micromanaging it. He's reporting back what he's already seen.
Right.
Then he already knows who makes the decision. You know, as an example, I think he knew you
before you knew him.
Right. Yeah. So, you walk to him, he'll walk to you.
Right.
I mean, he'll assist you, absolutely. Give you some extra help, whatever you need to get over the hump, so to speak.
Yeah, and that leads us back to this, I want to go back right here to where I started there with the forgiveness issue. In each case, there's somebody forgiven. They happen to be family. I mean, as an example, Dode was forgiven for his pretty serious indiscretions.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
When you set a guy up to be killed so you can have his wife, and that's a serious indiscretion. There's no question about that. In my mind, I don't think on a strictly human societal level, I've done anything anywhere near that bad. Okay, and I doubt if either one of you guys have, and I doubt if anybody in the chat room has.
Mm-hmm.
But those certainly did.
Yeah.
And he was certainly forgiven for it, but then again, Dode's family, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And here's what Yahweh says
about
him.
He availed him of Yahweh's plan of salvation. He availed himself of Yahweh's method of forgiveness. That's the he. He engaged for that.
He did not sit back and go,
I'm going to wait for some, I'll just wait for God to forgive me for this. He engaged.
Yeah, and he also did not rely on his pure heart and donations to other people and his great humanitarian efforts. He didn't rely on himself, in other words. He decided to rely on the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
On Yahweh's words. Because,
absolutely.
You know.
But he already proven that for quite a while by the time he gets to that story. You know, he's already slain Goliath. He's already answered the call. They got a very strong relationship to begin with. So I think the power, when you're that powerful and that famous, all of a sudden, the opportunities came along and he made some really bad choices.
Yeah, right, which most people will do, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Most people in that position make even worse decisions than he did, obviously.
Yeah.
But when we talk about forgiveness, we're talking about forgiveness for indiscretions within the family, you know.
Yeah.
Well, now,
did he really forgive him, or he made him a tzedak? I mean, you didn't really say, okay, I'm going to forgive this, and I'm going to forgive
that.
Well, he was
tzedak.
But, I mean, he was just tzedak, so it was, God saw him, or Yahweh saw him as perfect.
Yeah, and I'm not even talking about Yahweh versus Dode right now. I'm talking about us versus our fellow man. But I'm pointing out, everything can be overlooked, But it has to be within the covenant, doesn't it? I mean, that's the point here.
Right, it's only one way, one door, yeah.
Well, I mean, either you're with the covenant or uh-huh. you're not. And if you're not, you get to be judged by all these things.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you're not going to be forgiven, actually.
If you want to be judged by the purity of your heart, that's going to happen. Good luck with that.
Yeah, you're in deep kimchi, as they say, because here it is.
That's what you want. Go for it.
Yeah, exactly. Good luck with that. And this is in Shemoth. Shemoth, just like Shem means name, Shemoth means names. Or words, and this is called Exodus today. I have no idea why. It's probably, or Shemoth means names, rather, not words. That's Dabarim.
Mm-hmm.
But I will genuinely act and actually engage to literally prepare, perform, and produce unmerited and unfailing mercy, unearned favor, and undeserved kindness on behalf of thousands who move towards me and love me, and also who approach me by closely observing and carefully considering my terms and conditions. That would be mitzvah. So, where does forgiveness fall in there, other than, you know, giving us unearned mercy and unearned favor and unearned kindness?
It's not exactly forgiveness. That's just ignoring it.
Yeah.
It's not saying, oh, it's okay, I forgive you. It's just like, I'm not even going to talk about that. Let's just go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's kind of like when you and your buddy have a big fight, and then, you know, a couple weeks go by, you get together, neither one of you mention it.
Yeah, well, I'm just asking, where in there does Yahweh say,
doesn't mention forgiveness.
Yeah, that you have to be out there forgiving everybody in order to, he says his terms and conditions, his mitzvah, and you can read his mitzvah, his terms and conditions, and the word forgiveness never falls anywhere in there, in any of them.
So why do you believe that the Christians do that? And I was one, and you were one, and so forth. But why do you believe that they do this so often? It's like you sit down and have dinner, and they want to pray and forgive us our sins. Forgive us our sins. You know, is it? What point are you forgiven or not forgiven? I mean, enough already.
Well, it's a matter of, I think it's tradition.
It's combined.
Yeah, it's mindless tradition. It's just sort of like being omnipresent. You know, it's omnipresent. That's why he has Moloch. The Moloch are out there because as messengers, because he's everywhere, right? I mean, it's stupefying, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's thoughtless. It's tradition. It's like Johnny, and he's got the devil on one side and God on the other, and they're arguing for his soul. You know, he doesn't know Johnny, if that's the case. You know, Johnny's a fence setter, and so he's well hated. Actually, he's unknown, and thus not family. So if we go back and we start looking at forgiveness, and say we look at some misquotes, I think they were in Yao Kanan, if I'm not mistaken, talking about forgiving your, maybe it's Matanyahu, 7 times 7, forgive your brother and all this. Considering there's been billions of people that walk the planet, and Yahweh's covenant, or his mercy as he's calling it here, is for thousands, how many brothers do you suppose you bump into on a regular basis?
Well, the simple fact that he says thousands, and he has words, I don't know what the word is off the top of my head, but I know I looked it up one time for even 100,000 in Hebrew, and he never uses that. If he meant there was hundreds of thousands,
left,
and millions,
thousands.
And he would have said so. That would not be just a casual mistake. That was very specific, because he mentions it another time later, too. So, I mean, Yosha says, few find it. I mean, he's not talking about thousands. He's not talking about hundreds of thousands, rather. So when your question was...
Well, I suppose thousands could be hundreds of thousands, but certainly not
the
region.
And it may be after they end 1,000 years, but I'm not sure that you can get up to 100,000 or so.
Okay.
I mean, he wiped out most of the people out of Egypt. They didn't make it. There was the family that went down there. There was only 70 immediate families going down there. Yahusha is surrounded by maybe 70, depending on which book you're reading, but certainly a small group. And there wasn't a huge following for hardly any of the disciples.
Well, and of course, or prophets. Right.
Or prophets. I mean, I'm alone, you know. I mean, Isaiah, Yahshua, he was pretty much alone. I mean, so we're not talking big numbers that I can find.
Yeah, so that just puts an apostrophe, you know, an exclamation point on what I'm saying. I mean, how many covenant family members do you run into in any given day?
No, I'm delighted that we are communicating this way so there are people we can actually talk to.
I think about three I see on a regular basis, but that's my wife and my brother and sister-in-law.
And so there you go.
Yeah, you're pretty isolated, the four of you. I mean, that's kind of the point that I'm making here. So if we
the nephews.
Yeah, so let's say we're to forgive our brother 7 times 7 times 7, whatever. You know, he offended us, he did this, he did that. I don't think murder would be one of those things, though, because I see Torah as pretty much, you know, murder, you're booted from the family at that point. But according to the Torah, from what I can see. But, you know, when I sit down and I think about the way Yosef forgave, you know, I mean, he even forgave being, kidnapped and, you know, sold into slavery.
Slavery.
I mean, that's a pretty big issue. But he did forgive family for that. So you can go pretty far, I think, shy of murder. You're pretty much forgiven, but, you know, you should forgive the family in any case. But, the family's few and far between, and you asked a question, why do I think? And you can give me your take on this. It's just, I think, that Christian tradition, because they can't really present the reason why Yahusha was here to fulfill the Moed and to interact with people and to lead them through the Moed, Mikra. They can't really, you know, I mean, the reason that, as an example, we have the Last Supper or the Lord's Supper, you know, as opposed to the Passover dinner, Pesach dinner, and I'll act as the Pesach lamb, and the next day I'll be in Sheol for Matzah, and the next day, my Nefesh will meet back up with the set-apart spirit for Bakurim, for the firstborn fruits. The reason they can't lay that out there is because that's all tied into Torah. That's that's the way Yahweh said he would resolve all disputes, right?
Yeah. Once you get your perspective right and you understand that this was the plan and you really study the plan, and then you toss in also, for me, I toss in also the fact that there are three destination points when you die, and then it all kind of came together, and then it became a moot point. I mean, of course, he forgives you. I mean, that's, once he puts his, you know, you walk through the door, you're clean through matzah, you're adopted, you're perfect. So, case closed.
Well, I think my point here is that at some point, though, within the religious community, you have to have a reason for Yahusha. If it's not the three Moed Mikrim, the actual fulfillment of the Moed by the diminished manifestation of Yahweh, if it's not that, you have to have another purpose. So you have to create a sort of a caricature, of an individual running around providing mercy and forgiveness for every lamppost he happens to bump into.
But think about the power of that if you can convince people to believe that, because then you can be a priest, and then you can be the dispensator of forgiveness. And at the Catholic approach, you come to confession, and he tells you, say, five Hail Marys, and da-da-da-da. I mean, what a powerful thing that is if you're trying to control people.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's exactly what I'm talking about here. I mean, that's...
So that's where it comes from. I mean, it's a approach. If I can get you to believe this stuff and get you out of the Torah, get your head out of the Torah, stop observing the Torah, then I got you. And that's what I was trying to do. And so back to your point, Christians just don't know because they really don't. They don't read the Torah, so they have... I boggles my mind some of the things we used to accept and heard, you know, from preachers and Christians, fellow Christians and stuff.
Well, I mean, that goes back to the point of faith, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't that what was saving you? Faith from Fidus, the Roman goddess of loyalty, by the way. Isn't that a lovely thought? But, you know, one of Yada's favorite Mizmor says, Yahweh's Torah is complete and entirely perfect for returning, restoring, and transforming the soul. Yahweh's testimony is trustworthy and reliable. That's the word amen. Not amen. Amen. Trustworthy and reliable, making understanding and obtaining wisdom simple for the open-minded. Okay? So, where does he say in there that Yahweh's Torah produces faith in the unknown that you should latch on to and believe in? He says his Torah is trustworthy and reliable, and it's also verifiable. So now what? Right?
And he's insistent on Shamar. Study it. Check every word. Check every letter.
Yeah, and of course we know Shamar is now copy edited to obey, right?
Yeah, absurd. It's not an in the lexicon. I mean, unless you can go down 20 words and then they'll throw in the King James Version where it says obey. But that's not there. There's nothing there in ancient dictionaries or the ones that cover years, you know, way back when. So it's just not there. You have to put it in there by lexicons that are published by the same people that published the Bibles.
Right. And so, you know, if we look at the Book of Korah, where that serves just like Haya serves as the base root word for Yahweh's name and Haya's existence, Korah is what? That's call out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it serves as
the meetings.
Yeah, it serves for the Mikra, the word Mikra. And, of course, it's the Moed Mikra that involve what? Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, you know, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Kara, which means called out, is the heart and the soul of the Torah. And in it, Yahweh presents his seven-part plan of salvation called the Moed Mikra. As well as the basis for his redemptive timeline, which is the Yobel. The Mikre, meaning called out assemblies, begin in the spring at Pesach, or Passover as it's called today, unleavened bread and first fruits, and they're followed 50 days later by the celebratory ecumenical feast of seven sevens, which is really Shabuah, meaning the feast of weeks. The first four Mikre were not only prophetic, but they were actually fulfilled and played out in human history during the advent of the Maaseiah Yahusha. He sacrificed himself as the Passover lamb on Nisan 14, which was a Friday, April 1st, 33 CE on our pagan calendars. And he paid the penalty for our sins voluntarily, separating himself from God's Spirit on unleavened bread the following day, and spent that time in Sheol, which is actually described as far worse than being crucified, mm-hmm. if you can picture that.
But, of course.
Wow.
To live your life with Yahweh's Spirit on you and then be separated from it, even for a day, would be, you know, incredibly
timeless.
But then you realize wasn't a day. You know, outside of time, that day was an eternity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that whole thing of we were talking about relativity. You know, in essence, that day or 2 day period is still going on for him. Think about it in terms of relativity. In that, that day was an eternity.
Yeah. Yes.
Because all time stops and you're just there.
Yeah, just worse than the crucifixion. And that's the most important date in human history, by the way.
That's the one that Christianity, you know, glosses completely over. They acknowledge the crucifixion, they acknowledge the arising, but that day gets no reference in Christianity whatsoever. There is no, you know, replacement for unleavened bread in Christianity.
And what is the point? What was the point of unleavened bread? We know that was to do what? Perfect us. That was, you know, I think, and this is my opinion, just like I think that Ha Satan said, men are so stupid, I'll get them to worship me in my own name, Lord.
Yeah.
And I'll have them call all things good by my name, Halal.
Yeah.
And they do it.
I was walking the dog home, and there's a, of course, all the decorations are up for all the people in the neighborhood, and they've got joy. And I was thinking, oh, yeah, there it is, joy to the world, the Lord has come. Boy, they absolutely know who they're having joy with. I mean...
Oh, I heard one of these disingenuous commercials singing about peace on earth and may there be peace on earth. Say what? Haven't you been paying attention? What do you mean? What are you wishing for here? Pennies from heaven? I mean, are you stupid? May there be peace on earth. Wow.
There will be. During the thousand-year run.
Most of the thousand-year reign, yeah, except for here at the end.
Even then, there ain't going to be perfect peace.
That's right.
You know what? Until there's no humans left, and we've all... Yeah, until we're at the point where this world has been destroyed, and everyone who exists is, you know, those who chose to be with Yah, there will be no peace.
Those who chose the Torah.
Won't be after that. There probably won't even be after that, because we'll probably start it all over. Because you know,
there'll be another world doing other things or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, when we look at the purpose, the very purpose of Yahusha was... his plan was to fill the Moed Mikra. I mean, that was his plan. And that would have been on Yahweh's year 4,000.
Right.
Because he explains to us a day is 1,000 years, 1,000 years is a day. And he, you know, from the fall of Adam, there were 4,000 years to the point, or two groups of 40 yobel, to the sacrifice, just like it's going to be 40 yobel from the sacrifice to the return. And when I'm sitting there looking at that 4,000, you know, if you go back to the original temple, you know, you had what, 4,000 cubits you walked up to what? To give the sacrifice. It was right there. Year 4,000 again, you know. It was built and encoded right into the temple. And so, you know, as yeah, it is. I mean, the signs are everywhere. The numbers mean things. That 4,000 cubits certainly meant something. His mission accomplished, the Mashiach, Yahusha's soul, left Sheol and met back up with the Ruach, the light. That's what it says, right? Yahshayahu, the set-apart spirit. And as a celebration of first fruit harvest, souls on Nisan 16, which would have been April 3rd, 33 CE. 50 days later, the Feast of Seven Sevens, known to Christians as Pentecost, the Greek word for 50, was fulfilled right on schedule on Sivan 6, 4000, making it May 22nd on 33 CE, when the set-apart spirit came upon the called-out assemblies, adopting and empowering them. Now, the next one, the next Moed Mekra to fall will be Teruah, often called trumpets. Today it shares no spot on the rabbinic religious calendar. They replaced that with Rosh Hashanah, you know, the Babylonian head of the year, when they all went into the temple of Marduk to see if their name was written in the Book of Life there in Babylon. But the first three Mikra were the very reason for Yahusha to be there. It was not for him to bump into people and forgive them all.
No.
Would that be fair to say? I mean, was that part of the plan? Is that anywhere in Korah? And is it anywhere part of the mitzvah that you should be running around forgiving everybody left, right, and center, no matter what heinous thing they've done to, say, somebody in your family?
You actually looked it up. There, the Hebrew word for forgiveness, which is, let me get the pronunciation right because I'm horrible with that, salah, occurs 34 times in all of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. And just looking through the first about dozen examples, it all has to do with, you know, do this. Yeah, it's a lot of it is in what we call Leviticus or Kara. You know, it's, you know, do this, and then they shall be forgiven. If they do this, then they shall be forgiven for what they did. It all has them engaging and performing and doing something. not just sitting back and waiting to be forgiven. Not
well,
which
you're all pointing.
He walked up to someone who did this and forgave them.
Right. Which
you have do you have a strong number?
I'm sorry.
55-45. Okay, go ahead. I was going to look it up and see what the criminal ancient one dictionary says.
Yeah, but these are all, the point I'm making here is that, and these are all symbols, correct me if I'm wrong, all these things they wanted him to go through, and you'll be forgiven, and you'll be forgiven, and you'll be forgiven. These are all symbols and signs of the seven Moed Mikra and Yahusha and the set-apart spirit, are they not? Because I don't know of any sacrifice that isn't.
No.
No.
So you would agree with that then, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. And that's my point here. I mean, that's, you know, I never understood, and a lot of people don't understand why it is on Shabbat today, we're told not to do the work of the Malach. Well, I didn't know exactly, but in this until Elise had pointed this out to me, did you know in Rabbinic Judaism, instead of making 12 loaves of bread, which you're to pierce, imagine that, I wonder what that might be symbolic of, they make 2 loaves of bread today. And one of them sits there, and then the other one, they actually fast until high noon, when the sun's right above them. I gotta love this. And then they eat that other piece of bread. Did you know that?
No.
I did.
I didn't either, but now I can see exactly why it says, do none of the work of the Malach on this day, the messenger. That would be Yahusha. Because I'm pretty sure that not eating, say, from, you know, the time you go to bed until noon the next day, isn't that big of a sacrifice. You know, compared to being thrown into prison, scoffed at by the very creation you made.
Being separated from God.
Beaten where you're, I'm sure your shredded back doesn't even have any skin left on it. Crucified and then thrown into Sheol. I'm sure that one doesn't equate to the other. Would that be safe to say?
Yeah, going without a meal or two does not equate at all.
Yeah, I just don't see it happening, okay? And so I think that's why we're not to pretend to do the work of the Malach, because, you know, that was pretty incredible work being done fulfilling the Moed Mikra. In fact, wasn't it...
do it anyway.
Yeah, wasn't it Dod that was absolutely astounded when he figured out how Yahweh was going to fulfill the Moed, right? In the 119th, he said, my flesh gets goosebumps out of an awesome respect for you, and because of your means to achieve justice and resolve disputes. That's the Mishpat. That's the Moed Mikra.
Mm-hmm.
I am generally respectful and completely awed. Now, of course, if you look in a Bible at that... in the book named after Bell, the Lord Bell, Ha Satan, it says, my flesh trembles for fear of thee, and I'm afraid of thy judgments. Wow. Okay.
Well, that sounds right up Satan's alley.
Yeah, I'm afraid of, you know, to accuse Dod of being, you know, who was absolutely pointed out as being Sadak, vindicated with Mishpat, you know, the means to resolve disputes a dozen times or so. There's no chance that the psalmist would have been trembling in fear over being called righteous and innocent. I mean, you know, but he would be in awe. And if you think about it, here you are, a minor creation. And Yahweh actually diminishes himself and takes this horrific beating for you. And I don't even know that I could describe the beating, because, you know, once you get into Sheol, you know, our minds probably can't fathom how rough that was, right? I mean, that's just sheer horror. But he goes on, you know, if we look at Quora, he says, when he talks about, and I'm only pointing this out because we have a religion based on a couple of things, I think, that I'm trying to challenge here. It's based on a couple of things, well, several maybe, faith and belief and forgiveness. That's kind of the three things, sort of the unholy, the holy trinity of, you know, of Satan. Faith in the unknown, belief, just because you believe it, you know, nothing verifiable, I guess. And then forgiveness. But yet, Yahweh says there's only this one narrow path, and it involves his mishpat, the thing that Dode here was awed about. And just to look at one of them, and this happens to be Kippurim, because any soul who, by way of relationship, does not respond to the summons and answer on this life-sustaining, corporal, and empowering day, these shall be cut off and separated from the family. Now that's Kara 23:29, and he's talking about the day of reconciliations, Yom Kippurim, when the family is reconciled to Yahweh. So if that day is not set aside, how many Christian preachers who don't set that aside and teach other people to set that day aside and consider that day, how many of them are going to be family, JB?
They don't set it aside.
Not a lot.
Kirk?
None.
How many are going to be there?
Zip.
I can tell you how many. None.
Mm-hmm.
Because anybody who doesn't set that side a day, or that day aside, that person's soul is going to be cut off and annihilated. And in 23:30, there's an actual repeat. I just read 23:29. And any soul who by association performs any of the business of the messenger on this life-sustaining, empowering day, that soul I will annihilate from the midst of the family. So let me ask you, on this day, should we afflict ourselves? Should... No. You know, who was afflicted on that day?
He was. Yosha.
Yeah. So what in the world would we be doing trying to do the work of Yahweh? Because Yahushua's the work and Masiyah means the work and implement of Yahweh. That's Yahweh's work. I mean, why would I afflict myself or even attempt to do the work that has already been done by Yahweh? It makes no sense at all.
Yeah.
And what happens if I don't show up or if I just blow that day off? I don't consider that day.
Consider Yah. He doesn't consider you. I mean, how many times does he have to say that? I mean, it's not that he's... Yeah, you made your own bed. I mean, he didn't punish you. The consequences, he just said, this is the consequence. You show up, you're part of the family. You don't, you're not. So, too bad.
No need to cry about spilt milk for those who don't bother to show up, which is the vast majority of the world, isn't it? And even when many of them do show up, and we're back on this narrow road, what happens? Don't those people try to do the work of Yahusha, of Yahweh? Don't they? By afflicting themselves, by starving themselves? Isn't that what happens? Look at me.
Yeah.
Look how good I am. Look how I've obeyed you. They even claim to be obeying him while they're disobeying him. He told them not to do any of that work.
Well, it's as absurd as Paul saying, I had to complete the work. You did?
Yeah, thank you, Paul. If we had known you were coming, we wouldn't have sent Yahusha.
Yeah.
You know? Right. Why would Yahweh?
Yahweh could have saved himself a lot of trouble if he'd have just known Paul was coming.
Mm.
Right.
And I've met people like that, by the way, in my own personal life. They told me they've just been good all their life. They told me so.
Never took a drink, never smoked a cigarette in my entire life.
Yeah, oh boy. I'm proud of you. I doubt if you're somebody I'd ever want to be around, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. You know, donuts.
I'm hearing this. Here's Yasha Yah, 111. Here's what he says. And this should hit home when people ask, you know, what is it that I'm not supposed to be doing on Shabbat that would be the work of, say, the Malach? Or what is it on those set-apart days where, you know, as an example, I'm not supposed to be doing the work of the Malacha, which would be the set-apart spirit. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the set-apart spirit was on Yahusha the whole time, other than when he was in Sheol. Is that not correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so both of these are Yahweh's word. And we're just going to put an apostrophe on that. And Yasha Yah, Yahweh saves. Well, there's a statement for you. Better known as Isaiah, which is meaningless today.
Right.
111. What is it to me, the many sacrifices of yours, says Yahweh? I have completely satisfied, literally fulfilled, the uplifting offering of lambs. Now, you tell me, what do you think that means?
Well, he's condemning them for their, like they're doing some great thing. I mean, when you think about it, they, other than the what you can learn from sacrificing the lamb on Passover, most the other side of it is that you're eating the lamb. You're the one that's benefiting. You've made no sacrifice. The lamb made the sacrifice. That's the symbol. He made the sacrifice. Yahusha made the sacrifice. What did we produce? I mean, what have we done? We've shown up. We've had.
What
we've
could
had
we possibly food. Do?
What could you add to that?
To what he did?
Yeah.
Nothing. Nothing. And my question was purely rhetorical. Believe me. I mean, there's a certain insanity to religion. Where somehow you're going to sacrifice yourself. This is, by the way, this is how the military operates, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to go out and you're going to make great sacrifices for your country. And yet you're flown all over the world to make those sacrifices in other people's countries while you're destroying that country.
Ours. Yeah, and theirs.
Isn't this, you destroy this country. Let's just say I'm in the American military and I get floated over to wherever I'm going or flown, and I get down there and sacrifice a few of their lives for, you know why? For freedom in the USA. Well, let me tell you how far that freedom goes. Let's just add it up. Over $6 trillion taken from the American people for weapons sold by the very elite that are having these military men used like bastard stepchildren. Wouldn't that be fair to say?
It is historic how they've done that way. The more you study, the more you get sick of what they've done to these.
Over 100 wars, and never one of them fought on this soil. Not one of them. Not one of them. So, you know, meanwhile, we have a government, and let's just get into the political realm of it. This is all walking out of Babylon. Meanwhile, we have a government who has ceded the border to the drug cartels.
Say that again?
Well, they've ceded the border to the drug cartels.
Oh, yes.
You know, there are areas in Arizona and Texas. You better not get near that border. You know, there are signs up that say you're not safe beyond this point. You know, they find dead bodies all over these ranchers' farms and everything else. Right? So what in the world could we possibly be doing with military guys in Iraq while our borders are wide open? And how serious would they be about fighting? Of course.
Creating enemies so we can take away our American freedom?
Yeah. There you go. And who gets to pay for it? The American taxpayer.
We do.
We pay both sides.
Yeah, they got you coming and going, man. You know, isn't it a beautiful thing? I mean, it's just beautiful, isn't it? The way it all works out. And, you know, these all fall into the whole Babylonian category. And these are the things we're supposed to walk away from.
Yeah.
You know, it's militarism. It's religion. I find religion is probably at the top of the list for me. But, you know, it's certainly militarism and politics certainly, affects a lot of people.
Yeah, there's no difference between any of them. Military, politics, religion, they're all the same.
Yeah.
There's not a dime's worth of difference.
Why do you think it is? Now, we've got this narrow path. We've already discussed the fact that we're down to, you know, literally thousands of people, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I see, you know, I do a lot of social media, and I know you guys don't.
Mm-hmm.
Kirk has a particular aversion to it, and JB is too busy. Okay.
I'm not big on that. Facebook anyways. There's too much drama.
You have an aversion to the computer. But
okay. But I see cutesies go by all day long. You know, they're like Hallmark moments, I call them, you know, where, fear of the Lord is the beginning of all knowledge. You know, and they got some guy on his knees. Real men are on their knees. You know, things like this. But you see a lot of people that go by, and they'll use Yahweh's name, albeit with a U in the middle, as opposed to taking the light, the O, the OR, out of it. And they will have cutesies on there, too. And they will discuss fear, or they will discuss the fact that Saturn's day, you know, is not the right day. In other words, we've got groups of people out here. They know his name is not Lord. They don't use Lord. They actively speak against Lord. They set apart the days. Some of them starve themselves on Kippurim, so they're naturally out of it. They're doing the work of the Malacca. But the rest, you'll see going down religious paths with Yahweh's name. Now, let's say that you know Yahweh's name, and you try to drag religion into the bayith, into the home, into the family. What do you think will happen there?
You destroy the home.
You ain't making it past the doorway?
That's my guess. You ain't getting in, buddy. You want to, if he let them in, of course it would destroy everything. I mean, that's why he had complete groups of people wiped out, like Jericho, people of the moon. There was really no room for them in the land, and there's not going to be any room for them in the land this time around either. And so, why I'm looking at what it is that gets people off the path. Well, we know that there's the three Abrahamic religions, and then a plethora of other religions that I'm not even going to discuss, but. Let's say we took Rabbinic Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Are any of those religions, can you think of which religion Abraham was?
It's none of those, but, you know, they're all submission religions. And you were just mentioning that, what was that verse you said that you get one of your little happy verses that popped through?
The beginning of knowledge is fear of the Lord.
Fear of the Lord, yeah. And so what you're basically saying is you have to be in submission. And that's so counter to everything in the Torah, and so prevalent in Christianity, and so prevalent in Islam, and so prevalent in Rabbinic Judaism. I mean, that's the whole thing for all three.
Yeah, so Abraham was none of those religions. He certainly didn't start a religion. I mean, I can see that right in the Torah. I mean, there was a family covenant started with Abraham, and then it was developed further through Moshe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much the extent of it, you know. And of course, the Moed Mikra, the answer in Korah, was fulfilled by Yahweh. Not completely yet, but almost. certainly the things that needed to be done. And while we're at it, what is it that PSOC represents, JB? Eternity, right?
Yeah, eternity. Removal
that gives
death.
Us eternity.
That's where we're leading to, yes.
Yeah, and what does Boxa give us?
It gives us a clean slate when we get there, so we can actually walk in. Two
beers.
Perfected.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a doorway, and then you have your foot mat where you wipe your feet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we all eat our peace alone, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't do it as a group, you know, as some kind of mass assembly. You know, we all eat our own peace alone for a week, don't we? I mean,
mm-hmm.
That's what goes on. And then what happened with Bakuram? What happened? What did that give us?
We get to see the Yahweh's family.
Okay. And then further on Shabuah, what happened?
Well, now you're empowered and enlightened.
Empowered.
And enriched.
Mm-hmm.
Man, you're there. You're royal family, man. You are stakeholder in the covenant, empowered. And when he says empowered times 10, he means to the 10th power.
Mm-hmm.
That means exponential growth. That's the difference between your physical body and a piece of paper and beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's incredible power.
Right.
And I could understand why Yahweh would give so few people incredible power.
Yeah,
I really could. I mean, you couldn't give that kind of power to a lot of people. They wouldn't know how to use it. They would misuse it. Wouldn't they?
Well, that's why he's taking all the Moloch away. That's why they're down here now, and they'll be put into a black hole.
Yeah, because they misused their power, didn't they?
Yeah, and they had it from the beginning. How much worse would it be to someone who's never been, you know, never got to be important, and all of a sudden now they've got all the power in the universe?
That's right.
My gosh.
So this is serious business we're into. It ain't Sunday school anymore. And speaking of fear, over in Yasha Yah 63:17, Yahweh gives us a real good reason for not being fearful. He says, what we see here is Yahweh. We have wandered away staggering in our intoxication. And we know what intoxication refers to. Religious notions.
Mm-hmm.
Poor judgment skills. Erring from your way, your Derek, hardening our hearts out of Yirah, fear. Certainly doesn't mean respect there. So we've hardened our hearts out of fear. Return for the sake of your servants. That's Yasha Yah 63:17. So what do you think fear could do to somebody who was looking for the path? It'd be a hindrance, wouldn't it?
It would paralyze them, yeah.
Most definitely.
Keep them away. They won't go. They won't walk in the door. They won't accept the invitation. I mean, what? They'd be scared.
Yeah, now, I'm
all over. Don't you encounter that, though, when you talk to so many people on Facebook? I mean, don't you think some of it is they've been so indoctrinated in their religion that they're absolutely fearful, even when confronted with undeniable truth? No argument there, and then they walk away even still.
Absolutely. Look, I've had people go look up Yira. Okay, mm-hmm. I'm just going to read this passage right here. And this is one of my favorites. Craig knows it's one of my favorites. Then Yahweh said, for so much as these people approach me with their mouths and their lip service, yet they remove their hearts from me, their Yira, and that would be fear, toward me exists because it is taught from man-made traditions learned by rote. Now, their fear stops their hearts from really going towards Yahweh, according to Yahweh. And he says that fear is unfounded because it's just learned from the traditions of men. I have shown that to people and said, now, you got two choices with Yira. And what are those choices, guys? You know what those choices are.
Fear or respect.
It's either respect or fear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the two. So, do you think Yahweh said, their respect towards me exists because it is taught from man-made traditions learned by rote?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you think he said, their fear of me, toward me, exists because it's, you know, taught by Roche.
Well,
from
really,
tradition.
Both can be, you know, implied. You know, most religious people think they're doing it out of a respect for God. But
yeah,
they
but
don't have any
Yahweh's
interested in.
I'm saying in context here. They've removed their hearts, not due to respect.
Applicable.
I don't. I do not. Not in any way.
I think they think they're respecting God, and they don't, but they don't realize they're not. Because it's been, you know, they're doing what they have been taught is respectful of God. You know, taught by man-made traditions.
You mean bowing and submission? And
yeah. They think it is showing respect to God. They're not doing it because they know what God wants. They're not doing it because they want a relationship with Him. They're doing it because they've been taught that that is how you show respect to God. And it has nothing to do with Him. I think
most of us it could be.
Well, that's the difference between a victim and one who promotes a religion.
I do think that's fear there. Because, and I'm going to tell you why. If I go down here and I want to know where fear comes from, and I go to Hosea today, 13:1. He says this: when Ephraim spoke, there was trembling and terror. He exalted himself in Yisrael, but with the Lord Baal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he was wrong and offensive, trespassing where he didn't belong, and he died. So, you know, and then Yahweh, we have wandered away, staggering in our intoxication, erring from your way, hardening our hearts out of Yira, fear. Certainly not out of respect. They didn't, you know, I think respectfulness would be, you know, considering his words, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I think man-made traditions all have people fearing God, don't they? I mean, you know, you got this fearsome religious deity, right? And for the most part, he says, love me or burn in hell. I mean, there's only two choices. You talked earlier, Kirk, about the
third
choice.
That's the biggie. That's the biggie for most of them because they don't know there's a third choice. I'll tell you a quick, very quick story. But we shared this early on with a neighbor. And she had no interest in becoming a member of the covenant that I could tell. However, she was extraordinarily relieved that the consequence wasn't, there wasn't an either or. That when she died, she could wrap her mind around that, that if you die, it's over.
Well, that's why Yahweh has that white throne judgment, remember? Uh-huh. All those people bowing in submission, they're all going to die. Or they're going to get to live forever in separation. They go over on that other side of that judgment fire, right?
Yeah, but when you have three choices, then the fear goes away. That's why a church would never allow it. That's why they hide it.
Right.
Because people just are not going to be afraid of God if they know, okay, if I don't like you and you don't like me, that's fine. I live my life, I die, I'm over. That satisfies a lot of people. If
right,
you're afraid that you're actually going to be tortured in hell, now you might want to think about it. Well, maybe I better get an insurance policy. Go to the preacher and say what I need.
Yeah, well, you know, it's fear that makes religion tick.
Yeah.
You know, it's fear that makes, you know, politics and governments tick.
Sure.
You know what I've learned is when I see words like fear, law, command, get on your knees, pray,
obey,
things like that. You know, I've got an antenna that goes up, and I know you guys do too. You're going, who wrote this dribble? You know, because this is not the creator. This is not the architect of life. This is not who I know. And sadly, you know, most people never get to that point because they're what? They're stuck inside the matrix of religious material, which pounds over and over again. You're to fear the Lord and obey his commands instead of, you know, observe his, you know, his words and learn from them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the instructions to us that, you know, the things we actually do to enter the covenant relationship, and by entering the covenant or the family relationship, I guess is the best way to put it, because mm-hmm. covenant just means really
contract.
The agreement, the contract, but, you know, we were trying to figure out a word for, you know, covenant. the best way would just say to enter the family, wouldn't it? I mean, that's what's going on.
Yeah.
And so if we look at the terms and the agreements, you know, as far as the mitzvah goes and so forth, you know, they're pretty limited. I mean, let's see. We walk away from Babylon. We recognize that, you know, they're lying to us politically, religiously, militaristically, you know, and all these other ways, you know. Being a good patriot isn't going to secure you a place in the home. Right? I mean, you know, it's got nothing to do with
right.
it. You know, you might be a good patriot in Iran, you know. I mean, that's not going to get you a place in the home. What I would tell you, or you know, what I try to convey to people is that, you know, that's the walking out process. But the walking out process really entails getting to know Yahweh, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to get out there on your own and be by yourself.
Yeah. But he didn't leave Abraham on him by himself. He won't leave you by himself. He didn't leave us by ourselves.
Yeah, but you got to know him.
Yeah.
I mean, and how do we get to know Yahweh today?
Well, you listen to what he has to say, and that's found in the Torah.
Yeah, and so he calls them his words, doesn't he?
His words,
I mean, he never says, my scripture, my religious material. You know, he says my words,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, and these are his words, and we are supposed to carefully consider the things he was saying and what they represent.
Yeah.
And we just went through the flood. I mean, Noah followed instructions. I mean, you know, he wasn't micromanaged in his life when he was building a boat, or you know, ark. He was doing what? I mean, interesting that he uses the word ark too. You know, because there's that ark of the covenant. So, you know, he could have used the word boat, and he didn't. You know, but you know, we're sitting there looking at what it was that saved Noah and his family. It was just simply listening to instructions.
Yeah.
No bane.
Well, ark is the English word. Aaron is the Hebrew word for ark, and it just means enlightened free will.
Yeah.
So even there's no obey. There's not. It's hard. It's hard to get. You can't get Christianity out of this. You can't get any religion out of this. You really can't.
Right, because it's enlightened free will.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, when I look at what it is that really makes a religion tick, it's fear. And it's fear, and then there's more fear. I mean, even up here where Dode is telling, you know, where Dode is telling telling us, you know, that he gets goosebumps and he's in total awe and has genuine respect for the way Yahweh, you know, fulfills the Moed Mikra, the Mishpat. You know, we have, my flesh trembleth for fear of thee. I am afraid of thy judgments. Now, what the hell does that have to do with what Dode's saying? Dode's awed. He's in awe.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's not afraid of anything.
No,
he's expressing an honest emotion here, which is awe, not fear.
No, he's the guy standing up with his two hands in the air, the hey, wow, you know, and behold, look at that, the wonder of it all. He can't find it there either. They ain't bowed down.
Yeah, I think I'm pointing this out. And I understand your point, JB, with the fear could be respect, and they think they're respecting God by fearing God or by being subservient or whatever it is that they're doing down there on their knees. But Yahweh says it's fear that, you know, separates people from him. You know, I mean, he made that clear in Yasha Yah. So, I we cannot love what we fear, correct? I mean, if I fear somebody, I certainly don't want to be around them. I'd probably go out of my way to not be around them. You know, I mean, that's
it's
just a human
relationship.
Yeah, right. And so
the abusive husband, wife stays around because she's afraid of what will happen if she leaves, but she doesn't really love the husband.
Yeah, but you know, the way I look at it, the way I look at that is that fear is just another thing that gets people off the path. I mean, it just gets them off that narrow path.
What is the most one of the most common words you hear in regard to religion? I am a God-fearing Christian.
I know.
They base their entire, I'm God-fearing. That's not a good thing.
No, Val, that separates you right there. You're going to have a problem. Why do you
want to follow a God you're afraid of?
Well, no, exactly.
What about that sounds appealing to anyone?
You mean accepting of all the politically correct religion, you mean? Where you're going to accept absolutely everything and love them all? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Well, that would be bad news. You know, there are religions based on that, pretty much, mm-hmm. on political correctness. Oh, they're a good person, you know, and you know, this good person is out there doing everything Yahweh told us not to do. You know, if our land, as an example, and when I say our, I'm talking about Babylon here. I'm talking about America, the USA specifically, the corporation of the USA specifically.
Okay.
If it were a just and moral people on a just and moral land, would we need giant police forces?
No, not giant armies.
Would we need locks on our doors and cameras to watch us?
Hardly.
So isn't there just really trillions of dollars in make work in believing that somehow we're a just and moral people and we hold the compass that's going to lead the world to freedom?
Well, it's the biggest joke of the century.
Yeah, and by the way, this could be said in all lands, I think, today. I think particularly in this last generation, I think people are vicious everywhere.
Yeah, and the strangest, not the strangest, but the most overwhelming thing for me in the last few years is the more I studied history, the more I studied what's available now that we didn't have in books that you could find. There's a lot of people who spilled the beans on history from the government's libraries and all, besides just, what's his name that's over there in Russia. You cannot. It's very hard for me to believe how truly evil we are. I mean, Yahweh says so. I mean, yada yada. In book 7, you know, where he has all those prophecies towards the end, is verbatim. But I mean, the more you study, it's just frightening. What I've learned in the last couple of months, and I go even further than that, the last 3 or 4 weeks, I can't even believe the stuff that we do.
Oh, no, it's hard to believe, and it's even harder to believe what the elite do. If you think what the little people down here do to each other, boy, I mean, you're in for a real eye-opener. Let me share this one. You might find this just lovely. Do you know where, do either of you guys know where methamphetamine was invented?
Wasn't it by the military? I have read that.
Yes, it was. It was actually invented in Nazi Germany.
Yeah, to make blitzkriegs more effective. Keep soldiers awake, active, and alert.
Yeah, didn't have to feed them very much, and they kept going.
Yeah,
they
keep going like crazy.
Well, the way they developed it was they took people from, Jews, actually, from... internment camps, and they dropped 40 pounds of rock on their back in a backpack.
Oh, yes, you said that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And did I explain this before? I mean, this is
I thought you did. You may have just said it to me, but I don't know.
Well, no, they walked them, and some of them lasted up to 3 days. You know, no food, no water. I mean, they just walked them to death. And they said, man, this is astounding. This is amazing stuff. So, the next thing they did was they tried it out on a dozen of these, a special skiing unit. It was a special force unit that used skis up in, you know, Bavaria or wherever it was, you know, on their own troops. And these guys kept going, just like the Energizer Bunny. And, of course, they couldn't feel how cold their feet were. And they just kept going and going and going. And all of them had to have their feet amputated. All of them. And they said, yeah, this is the drug we're going to go with.
Now, you know that the Saudis are supplying that to the soldiers, the so-called soldiers, the Islamic State fighters.
Yeah, I guess they're going to keep going, too, like the international.
Yeah, they arrested one of the House of Saud's, you know, there's so many princes because there's so many children per,
yeah, sure.
Per whatever wing of the family there is, but they arrested one of them. He got off, of course, and his whole airplane was just loaded with the stuff. You know, and they did, but so it kind of spilled the beans on what they were doing. But apparently, once they opened that keg, all the other stories came out where, yeah, they just supplying them with them so they can keep on fighting and fighting and fighting.
Well, this story gets better because the Americans now, you know, we look at the Nazis. Oh, they could do all this horrible stuff. Well, it gets better because the Americans said, well, we need something to give our troops. And they came up with something like, it was over a dozen, I think it was 18 different drugs that would all do the same thing. But there was one drug, Doxy, and I forget it's Doxy something and something, that actually, it performed the same way, but guess what else it did? It instilled bravery in you. Made you brave. And they had an English battalion try it out. And, of course, at this time, England was getting its proverbial ass handed to itself by Rommel over in northern Africa in, you know, the tank battles. So that's where they decided to try it out. And they sent this whole tank battalion in. And they fought to the last guy, and all of them died. But they did extraordinary things. They would stop at nothing. And then that's what America decided to give her troops, and the British as well. Isn't that amazing?
Aren't we moral and upright?
We're a great country,
yeah,
aren't we?
Yeah, that's the shining beacon of hope for the world. And, you know, I guess what I'm saying here is that we know, as covenant people, the shining beacon of hope is Yahweh and His Torah. And we know now that Torah also contains the word light, and He most closely associates Himself to light. And wrapping ourselves in the light of the Torah is the one and only lone path to Yahweh. He's never changed. He didn't lie to us. He fulfilled the Moed Mikra, just as He stated He would do in Yashayah. What is it, the many sacrifices of yours? Nothing. That's what. What am I to sacrifice? Let me ask you. When you go out and you share words with people of Yahweh's words, do you find that to be a sacrifice, or do you find it fun and interesting to do if someone opens their eyes and ears and actually listens?
Well, my absolute favorite topic of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens when somebody's receptive to that conversation?
Yes.
I get energized.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, there's your energizer bunny right there, Yahweh's word.
I could be tired, ready to go to bed. That topic comes up. I'm awake, and I will sit there till 4 in the morning talking with the person. I can't get enough of it.
It's astounding.
That is like a drug.
We hit a brick wall every now and then. I know I do.
Most
you know, I'm learning, and then I hit a brick wall. There's a thing called energies of the mind. I'm just going to share this. On usual occasion, we make a practice of stopping an occupation as soon as we meet the first effective layer of fatigue. Have then walked, played, or worked enough so we desist. That amount of fatigue is an efficacious obstruction on this side of which our usual life is cast. But should unusual necessity force us to press onward, we find a surprising thing occurs. The fatigue gets worse up to a certain critical point. Then gradually or suddenly it passes away, leaving us feeling fresher than before. We have evidently tapped some unused level of energy, masked until then by a fatigued obstacle usually obeyed. There may be layer upon layer of this experience, and I don't care what it is that you or I are trying to learn. At some point, we hit a brick wall, but then it all comes together and we move forward and we feel better about what we're doing. And it's all fresh and we learn more and there's other layers we go into. And isn't that really what the Torah is about?
Mm-hmm. Well said, yes.
And so, you know, there is no other path but the Torah. Everybody that finds themselves getting pulled off that lone path and off that mishpat and off having our male children circumcised and walking out of Babylon, what's going to happen to those people?
I mean, if they get off the path?
Yeah, if they get off the path, what happens to them?
Well, it's just like, well, eventually Satan will get them. They'll either wither up and die, you know, like the parable of the sowing of the seeds. Some of them will start, and then they'll get off the path, and they're, you know, it leads to destruction eventually.
And they exercised free will, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, it's always choice. No one's making you stay on the path.
And what is it Yahweh's interested in? He's interested in people that want to meet him.
They want to be there, yeah.
They want to meet him.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's nothing wrong. I really, really like Dode, man. I'm telling you, I think the benefits are a really big deal. Okay, I'm not going to be so disingenuous to say I'm not interested in the benefit of being royal family within the universe. I mean, that would be stupid.
In my opinion.
You know, but I really have come to a point where I want a face to face sit down and. You know, thumb wrestle with Yahweh. I'm telling you, I do. I really do. I want to meet him. And that's one of the things in the religious realm you never really consider. At least I can tell you I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's this deity on a hill and you're bowing down in fear.
Pretty much.
You're not meeting him.
No.
You know, that can't be a driving force for you to be in the circus on Sunday.
Hmm.
Could it? I mean, I never really considered shaking hands with Yahweh, who wants to be welcomed as an individual. You know,
it's never presented that way. Never presented that way.
JB, I mean, what's your thought?
Never. Not once, not ever in anything.
Right, but what's your thought now? Your thought now is you want to be in a room with Yahweh. Right?
Oh, yeah. I'll sit down. I got a million questions for him.
Really?
Well, where could you hang out that would be more fun?
Well, nowhere. Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be possible.
Third, I even think it's something better than hanging out with him. Now, that doesn't mean he won't let you do your own thing, some.
No, I think that's a great deal of what we'll be doing is our own thing. But it'll be based on having the Torah, you know, become an intricate part of your interconnected life.
And he's the Torah, so he's there with you all the time anyway.
Good point. I never really thought of it that way.
We reached the end of the show, and I got a pregnant wife who's hungry, so I'm going to have to
go. How are y'all doing? Everything good?
Oh, everything's going great. We're excited. We get to go next week and do the next sonogram, so we get to see the latest pictures and all that. So.
Wow.
And so for all that, you're just going to cut us off? I mean, that's it?
I got a pregnant wife. I'm going to go give her some
sacrifice here or something, man. No.
I'm keeping her happy. That's my job right now.
Yeah, well, I'm hearing that.
Job.
You know, one thing you never want to be, JB, and I'll just let it go, you never want to be cut off, you know?
Yep. But I know I'm going to end the show, so I want to go let you guys know. So,
I enjoyed it, you guys.
I won't be here next week. I'll be on vacation next week, but I'll be back the week after that. But
you know who will be here to light the place up? Yada. So
we'll come back when you go.
You don't have to shake in here, man. Okay.
All right.
Okay. Happy Shabbat. I'll see y'all next week.